keeping pace.
You dolt, you blockhead, you utter ninny.
Though Yang Chen's healing was flawless as usual, Kavik's hand still throbbed. Phantom pains, mixed with embarrassment.
Here's the newest agent of the White Lotus, throwing a tantrum in front of the Avatar. You cost her the chance to chase down Kalyan.
The briefing in the safe house washed over his ears, a blob of sound that might have been his name.
Hey! Hey!
Kavik snapped to attention. Is there a problem? Yang Chen asked. She looked at him from across the map table. Her phrasing was stern, but the concern in her eyes was gentle. The rest of the teams, less so.
No.
He put his arms behind his back so she wouldn't catch him rubbing his knuckles again. Jujinta tracked the movement with his eyes, as if taking mental notes for an upcoming prize fight.
Delicate hands. Good to know.
The two of them had already informed the others about Kalyan's visit and the Earth King's presence in Taku. They'd handled it rather well, all things considered.
Your entire family can rot in the same pit as Fei Shan, Tayugum had said.
Kavik sometimes forgot the Earth King was responsible for Tayugum's and Akudan's imprisonment.
Take that back, he'd replied. My parents are very nice.
Yang Chen had immediately spent the night after Kalyan's visit, analyzing the notes they'd stolen from Iwashi's books on the ship. The freshness and value of the information would deteriorate quickly, since the longer they waited to capitalize, the higher the chance Chai Si realized Iwashi's string of misfortune was no accident, assuming she hadn't already. That was why Yang Chen called the meeting shortly after dawn. Kavik had been hurled awake by the sound of that infernal gong, whose reach seemed to penetrate every corner of Taku. He was tired. But the dark bags under Yang Chen's eyes indicated she hadn't so much as napped, and Kavik could tell from scent and temperature that she wasn't drinking the same tea as them. Something stronger. She quaffed her special brew and set the cup aside. As I was saying, the records we nabbed from the Bliss Eternal narrowed the possible locations for Thapa to be hiding in down to a manageable number. Yang Chen paused and angled her head, a brief moment to acknowledge something going right for once. But there's something else I learned. Chai Si doesn't only lease property from Iwashi. She charters his ships as well. According to his logs, small vessels occasionally used to leave Taku carrying supplies while returning empty. They never made port in any of the other Shang cities.
Sounds like he's just trading on the side to avoid paying his dues on the customs revenue, Kavik said. Like the Bin Er Shangs were.
The goods aren't valuable enough, Yang Chen said. We're talking cheap foodstuffs, clothes, the bare necessities for survival. I have a hunch that these ships provisioned a secret location where Chai Si trained the firebenders.
Tayagum frowned. That's a big hunch. I didn't reach that conclusion when I transcribed the notes.
You haven't spent as much time as I have studying the false names Iwashi uses for his counterparties, Yang Chen said. I've been thinking about this day and night. It takes time and effort to develop bending prowess. Bitter work from both student and teacher. Turning Tapa, Yingsu, and Xiaoyun into weapons would have required a proportionally huge commitment of resources. Yang Chen spread a different map over the first, a rendition of the Muoce and its neighboring seas. The Port Tuguk testing range I discovered a while ago wasn't set up to house anyone for an extended length of time. Chai Si must have an isolated large-scale operation somewhere else under her control, and an uncharted island in her home territory would be the perfect fit. She began to mark up the paper. Her strokes crossed the waters between the Shang cities, back and forth, lines thickening with each round trip. The prevailing winds keep merchant ships leaving Taku primarily within these corridors, and these are the most common air nomad flight routes. I hate to admit it, but we rarely deviate from them, because we can travel in straight paths. Convenience rules us, too. By the time she finished scrawling, a distinct patch of sea in the shape of a triangle remained unmarked. "Here," she said, tapping the center with the tip of the pencil hard enough to blunt the lead. "Process of elimination."
"What are you proposing? That we drop the plan and leave Taku to search open water for an island that may or may not exist?" Kovic said.
"I admit it sounds daft," Yang Chen said. "But after Binner, I couldn't pursue Chai Si as hard as I wanted, because she hung the threat of more firebenders over my head. And last night, Kalyan did the same. There very well might be other members of Unanimity out in the world. I need to know if this ordeal ends with Tapa, and I can't pass up the chance to find out."
"I agree with the Avatar," Jujinta said. "We should go look."
"You always agree with her," Kovic snapped. "You're about as useful in these planning sessions as an iguana parrot."
Akudan calmly put his hand between them, both to block their view of each other and to remind him how much bigger his fist was than theirs.
"Where would we find the time?" he said to Yang Chen. "You're needed in Taku."
"In a bit of luck, I have at least an entire day off. A messenger came at dawn. Iwashi's called for a temporary adjournment of the convocation. He's not feeling very well and needs to rest."
"Ha!" Tayagum grinned at Kovic. "You broke another man's spirit so badly, he had a physical reaction. Good work."
Kovic grimaced and flexed his fingers behind his back.
"We still need to watch for Tapa," Akudan said.
He peeled the sea chart away to examine the city map of Taku again.
"With how these locations are arranged, we could get away with two people on the stakeout. How do you want to split the group?"
Yang Chen paused. Kovic understood the decision wasn't as trivial as it sounded. More protection and safety on this impromptu sea adventure meant fewer eyes in Taku. She responded by encircling him and Jujinta with an arm each, like bales of straw. "We'll handle the search for the island. Me and the boys. It'll be a bonding exercise." She squeezed them hard enough to make Kovic's eyes water. "You two will be on your best behavior, won't you?" she said, her smile more dazzling than the early morning sun. They had to leave as soon as they could, Yang Chen told them. A lot of ocean to cover, and not much time. The real reason for an immediate departure was more complicated. Yang Chen needed to plumb the secrets of this supposed island before Kovic had a chance to meet with the White Lotus and give them the information. His double agent status forced her into hurrying. Nothing he could say would work to slow her. Everyone split up to prepare for their next task. The Avatar flitted back and forth between the members of her squad, overtaken by a frenetic energy. When Kovic quietly suggested to her in the kitchen that she rest and leave the work to them, she rebuffed him. "Both Iwashi and the White Lotus are wrong," she'd said, her voice lowered to keep the conversation in one room. "Neither Sparrowbones nor Paisho encapsulates life, because enemies in real life don't take turns with each other." She handed him the empty cups she'd cleared from the table. "Chai Si's been forcing me to stand still, and other people have paid the price for my inaction. No more. We need to determine her true strength once and for all, and we're not going to accomplish that by resting." Kovic wanted to tell her she was blaming herself unfairly, and consequently pushing herself at an unhealthy pace. But it was too late to express such concerns at this stage, when the Zongdu of Zhandori sat across the table and Kalyan dropped by for friendly visits. The right time would have been long before the convocation. "I could have spoken up had I stayed by her side as a real companion," he thought with a pang in his chest. "For now the game is a race," Yang Chen said. "We don't get to determine what we think is an appropriate speed and then stick to it. The answer to how fast we should go is faster. She stormed away to check on the others. Perhaps he only imagined her fatigue. The leads provided by Iwashi's books might have reinvigorated her. Kavik began to pour out the cups into a bucket so he could wash them. A Unirock had ingrained in him the habit of cleaning up after himself for operational security. A dirty dish could reveal how long ago the occupant of a safe house had used it. But then he stopped. One of the clay drinking vessels contained the remnants of the Avatar's tea. She'd packed the cup with leaves nearly to the brim, certainly not how it should have been served. A hunch of his own scratched at his skin, demanding attention. Kavik looked around, not wanting to be accused of scandalous behavior, and took a small sip of her dregs. It tasted like regular tea. A little on the grassy side, peppery even, but not unpleasant. She just likes this blend, whatever it is, he thought. He'd been suspicious over nothing. Between one heartbeat and the next, Kavik's pulse became thunder. His hands trembled. His face grew hot. He was more than alert from the brew. He felt maddened. Her drink had to have been tenfold stronger than his, and she'd been downing it all throughout the night and morning. When you're done in there, can you bring up the travel rations from the storage room? Young Chen called out to him from around the corner. She sounded perfectly normal, and not like her veins were about to burst. Kavik couldn't reply without his voice shaking. The best he could manage was a gargle of acknowledgement before needing to lean against the wall. He thumped his fist a few times until his bearings returned and hurled the damp bolus of leaves into the waste bucket like it was poison. The Avatar was putting a physical and mental strain on herself that would have sent a normal person to a hospital bed. He needed to tell the others so they could force her to slow down, to stop before she'd never forgive you. Impede her plans again and see what happens. See if she'll keep you around. Kavik jammed the heels of his hands into his pulsing eyeballs. She wasn't an ordinary human being, he told himself. He had to believe in her, the same way Jujinta and the townsfolk around the Northern Air Temple did. First door on the left, she called out again, annoyed that she couldn't hear her commands being followed with promptness. His vision cleared enough to find the storage room. Kavik stumbled inside and groped through the darkness, searching for the supplies. The Avatar had made it perfectly clear what she wanted. It wasn't up to him to second-guess her. Bonding. At least New Jian looked spectacular as usual. A day of frolicking in the wilds outside Taku had rejuvenated the Avatar's bison. He came to them by bounding over the meadow, enjoying the contact of his 6 feet on the earth. The grasses shook at his impact. "Not so loud," Yang Chen said to him. She wore a gray city dweller's outfit for the mission and had wrapped her head in a scarf. "You're going to draw attention." New Jian huffed, slowed to a trot, and tossed back his woolly curls, fallen leaves woven into his fur like the embellishments of a landscape painter. Despite the scolding, the very first thing he did upon reaching them was to nuzzle his airbender. Yang Chen leaned into the touch, her eyes closed. Kavik could sense the strength they drew from each other. Yang Chen barely ever touched Nu Jian's reins, and often spoke to him as if he were a sibling rather than a beloved steed. It must have been nice to be able to rely on someone so completely. Right now, a different sky bison wearing Yang Chen's normal saddle slumbered in Taku's stable, pampered by grooms and handlers who were most certainly on the payroll of the Zongdus. The switch had been prepared in advance in case they needed to leave Taku without anyone knowing. Nu Jian had never entered the city. So encased in deception were they that even the Avatar's bison had a body double. At least Kavik could look forward to some quality time with the best member of the team. The one who knew a grudge couldn't live forever. He extended his arms as Nu Jian approached.
Oh, there's my big fluffy. Hey, hey, that's cheating.
Jujinta, using his innate talent at producing hidden objects out of thin air, held up an apple that had distinctly not been part of the supplies. Nujin veered away from Kavik and cozied up to the filthy briber, rumbling until he got his treat. The expression in Jujinta's eyes as he scratched the bison's ears was colder than the teeth of an ice saw.
That's right, his dead soulless gaze said to Kavik. I will take everything from you.
Sure, keep wasting valuable time, Yang Chen said. She'd already leaped onto Nujian's withers. Just remember I can turn him against both of you with a word. That ended the showdown. Kavik and Jujinta climbed into the saddle without another word. Some threats were too horrific to ignore. Kavik could admit to understanding Iwashi's obsession with boats this time of year. The weather was absolutely stunning. Had he similar means as the Zongdu of Taku, he also might have chosen to idle his days away in these waters. Gone was the stifling humidity of the coast, replaced by a warm, pliant breeze. The ocean rolled and foamed beneath them, a layer of confection spread as far as the eye could see. The only thing ruining the flight was the company.
Will you stop doing that? Kavik said as Jujinta slowly, unnervingly rotated his head back and forth over the saddle edge.
Yang Chen had assigned them a direction each to monitor.
Staring at the same patch of open water more than once is pointless. If you didn't see it the first time, you're not going to see it the next.
You search in your way, and I'll search in mine, Jujinta said.
He made another swivel, taking deliberate care to blink at regular intervals.
Besides, only a fool trusts his first glance. The sun glare, a large swell blocking a portion of the horizon. You may have already let our goal slip by in your carelessness.
Kavik rolled his eyes and leaned back. He tapped his foot against the saddle. Once, twice. Finally, he scowled and turned to look behind them. There was nothing, of course. He'd been skeptical of this plan from the start. Drawing conclusions about the existence and location of a secret base from gaps in records felt flimsy to him. He preferred positive confirmation, direct evidence. Perhaps he would have been more convinced had Yang Chen allowed him to read the stolen notes. But there was no way she was going to reveal more information to the White Lotus than necessary.
"Can you drop us close to the water?" Jujinta asked her. "Really close?"
Yang Chen clicked her teeth, and Nujian rolled sharply to the side. Kavik had to hang on to the rail behind him to keep from sliding across the saddle. Jujinta leaned down as they descended, reaching for the water's surface, until they got close enough for him to skim his fingers along the waves.
"Anything?"
Yang Chen shouted over the slicing hiss.
"No."
Jujinta withdrew his arm and shook the salt water off.
"I thought I'd give it a try."
Nujin leveled his flight path and reascended. Kavik considered what he'd just seen. They should have brought Tayagum if they wanted to read the currents. He was the most experienced sailor.
"You know how to wayfind?"
"I guess not well enough," Jujinta said.
"You don't need to look so surprised. I was born on an island. I have as much affinity for..."
He cut himself off.
"Ha," Kavik said. "You were going to say you had as much affinity for the water as me, before realizing how stupid you would have sounded. It's a good thing we didn't put you in front of a washi. He would have picked his teeth with you."
He settled back into a seat and waited for a comeback.
"So I'm not the best talker,"
Jujinta said quietly.
"I'm not as quick-tongued as either of you."
He'd withdrawn into himself, his lips pressed tightly together. His posture, tense to the point of nearly shaking, reminded Kavik of how he'd carried himself before the warehouse job in Jeonduri, when the other members of the association mocked and cheered against him in the knife-throwing contest. He'd forgotten to resume sweeping the horizon back and forth. Kavik caught Yang Chen glaring furiously at him over her shoulder.
"Right.
He couldn't spar with his former partner the same way he did with the Avatar. Threatening to kill each other was somehow fair game, but not making fun. They wouldn't have asked Jujinta to play act any more than they would have assigned Kavik to knock out an enemy at range. He sighed.
You know, even back in Jandari, I don't think I recall you mentioning where you grew up.
Because I didn't, Jujinta snapped. My people don't reveal secrets to outsiders.
At this point, we're not exactly outsiders anymore. You already know my dirtiest piece of laundry, and it's good manners to reciprocate. Come on, spill.
Everyone imagined themselves a fortress. But if there was one lesson Kavik had learned from his conversations with Marx, it was that a retreat behind walls was often a plea for relief. Apparently, Yang Chen agreed, because she let go of the reins to join them in the back. She tucked her feet under her in a lotus position. Sharing stories with people who care about you can sometimes ease the burdens we carry. A secret released is like a shouldered stone dropped into the sea.
Jujinta eyed them both, warily, unsure of how to deal with a two-pronged assault of friendly interest. His jaw twitched, a series of false starts that seemed like they would build up to the real one. But the wind shifted.
Jujinta shut like the lid of a clam, arms folded over his chest.
There's no point in talking about my home, he said, because I can never go back there again.
Kavik scoffed. Never's a bit strong, don't you think? If you've got heat on you, it'll die down eventually.
I agree. Time heals many a rift, Yang Chen said. I'm sure that once you're ready, you can return.
I can't, Jujinta roared. What part of that do you two not understand?
They'd pushed too hard.
Jujinta never raised his voice, most certainly not at the Avatar.
I can't simply declare things fixed, he said. If something happens and it's your fault, then it's your fault forever.
The furrow in his brow caused the scar over his nose to deepen.
You,
he said to Kavik, brimming with resentment.
Just sauntering back into the team's good graces without a care. I know you think you can talk your way out of any situation, but you can't. You don't get to speak a new reality into existence just because it suits you.
He turned to Yang Chen.
And with all due respect, Avatar, you are welcome anywhere in the world. You don't know what it's like to be severed from your roots.
Yang Chen's face went pale. Jujinta didn't know that she'd been exiled from the Northern Air Temple. Nor could he have known Kavik wasn't safe in Bin Er or Agna Kala. He'd flung his knives blind and caught them both dead center. A consummate trick shot artist. No one spoke. To think, the three of them could have bonded over how similar their circumstances were, had the truth not been such an impossible gulf to bridge. Nujian grunted, mercy killing the conversation by alerting them to a flock of seabirds up ahead. Frigaterns. The gray birds sliced into the wind like the tip of a weather vane. Several of them carried small fish in their beaks. That had to mean a nest was close by. The Avatar's hunch was correct. Somewhere up ahead was land. Celebrations were in order.
Nujian's looming bulk set off a frenzy of cawing from the frigaterns.
We should have placed bets,
Jujinta said over the noise. Circumstantial evidence. They debated the merits of a scouting flyover and quickly decided against it. The place could be crawling with firebenders the likes of Thapa, Yang Chen said. We don't know for sure. So they settled on a low approach, skimming the waves. The island grew nearer, expanded. A thickening green brushstroke atop black volcanic sand. The painter's perspective. Kavik gripped the saddle rail, his knuckles nearly bursting through his skin, as Nujian swung from side to side in a serpentine pattern. He thought it was the motion making him dizzy and nauseous, until he realized
He'd been holding his breath and counting until the noise came. Unanimity had baked a terror into his bones that he wasn't over yet. Yang Chen landed Nujian on a stretch of beach, barely wider than he was. "You can't come charging in if you hear explosions," she said to her bison once their feet were firmly on the ground again. "You understand me? No heroics this time. It's too dangerous." Kovic wasn't sure if her companion got all of that, but better safe than sorry. The forest of thick-trunked lava palms came up to the edge of the shore, dense as clasped fingers, and blocked any view of the interior. To venture farther, they'd have to duck inside a bowed arch dripping with vines. "I feel like we're encroaching on the domain of a spirit," he said as he filled a skin with seawater and slung it over his shoulder. "We're not," Yang Chen said. "No vengeful beings on this particular island."
"Are you sure?"
"Pretty sure." They tiptoed over the web of roots, crisscrossing the forest floor, line abreast, him and Jujinta guarding the avatar's flanks. Kovic found comfort in moving together. Their physical coordination almost made them look like a real team. The going was slow. Because of the humidity, moss had grown over every surface, coating the trees and rocks in a jade fur. The sun, sieved through the canopy above, dappled the forms of Kovic's mission partners as they crept through the trees, giving them the shifting light-dark-light forms of tiger dillos. He noticed over Yang Chen's head, and slightly behind her in her blind spot, a pair of green and black plumed birds he didn't know the name of. The idea that they were following the avatar would have been ridiculous had they not been moving in complete unison with her. Whenever she took a step, they took a little hop along the branches to keep up. Step. Hop. Kovic waved at Yang Chen. "Are those birds following you?" he whispered. "Do you have food in your pockets or something?" As soon as she looked behind her, the birds flew down from their perches and landed on her shoulders. They chirped sweetly and fanned their tails, revealing a spot pattern that resembled a winking face. The sight of nature flocking to the avatar was amusing, but also not. Disrupting the animals around them could give away their presence. Yang Chen frowned at her new disciples until they got the message and flitted away into the forest. "Don't worry," Kovic said. "I won't tell Pick and Pock you've been cheating on them." She rolled her eyes at him and kept going. Yang Chen suddenly raised her fist again, not to tell Kovic off, but to call for a halt.
"What is it?"
Jujinta asked quietly.
"There's a clearing ahead."
Kovic peered as far as the crowded growth would allow.
"How can you tell?"
"The wind blows differently. Careful now." Jujinta reached under the back of his shirt and drew a long, wicked dagger. Kovic removed the stopper from his waterskin and placed his thumb over the opening. For once, they weren't trying to out-brandish each other. Their leader, who had the sharpest senses, took point, and they fell in behind her. Sure enough, the forest eventually gave way to an open expanse, a swath of combed, tended land within the tangle of trees. About a dozen long huts lay in rows. Kovic noted several of the roofs in disrepair, the woven fronds eaten away to reveal bamboo poles jutting out like the ribs of carrion. They waited to see if anyone came or went. No one did. Yang Chen hefted a rock and earth-bent it with scorching speed at a distant tree. A hollow thunk reverberated through the clearing. Still nothing. No one came to check on the noise. "Stay close to me," Yang Chen whispered. They ventured toward the nearest hut and peeked through the door. Inside was empty except for an internal scaffolding of bamboo that lined the walls.
"Storage?" Kovic guessed.
"Barracks," Jujinta said.
the rest of the huts contained the same sets of frames. Assuming Jujinta was right about the beds, this complex could have slept 100 people.
There can't be that many tapas running around, Kavik said. There simply couldn't.
The four nations would lose their collective minds. There would be no stable footing if unanimity could be had by the dozen for cheap.
Let's keep searching before we draw any conclusions, Yang Chen muttered.
Let's not dive into the nightmare scenario before we have to. The world could stay whole and unbroken for just a little longer. Only one building in the camp stood out, a double-length lodge that capped the rows of huts. One half of the interior was clearly a training floor where fighters and benders could practice forms and spar. The other end was a jumble of bare bookshelves, broken jars, wooden poles of varying lengths. He picked up a potsherd and sniffed the curved, stained inside surface. The odor had faded, but he could still detect the once pungent baji tian and mustard seed. Ingredients for ditta jiao, hit medicine used to numb and toughen knuckles ruined by punching. The same kind of wounds the Avatar had treated on him, but with the damage tempered into the bones instead of undone. Based off the remaining trash, the occupants had gone through the herbal remedy like water. Kavik looked at the room again with different eyes. A training floor was nominally a respected space where students could make a noble effort to hone their skills. Even his dingy Gidu basement counted as a hall of learning under a Unirok's tutelage. This place gave him the impression of a factory instead. An assembly line that made injured people. The product could be moved from one end of the building to the other for maximum efficiency. There was no dignity of a Sifu's touch he could discern here. Only output.
Look at this.
Jujinta held up a large scrap of paper. The remaining corner of a scroll that had likely been pulled from the wall in haste. On it was the depiction of a human arm, naked, marked up with lines like a butcher's guide of where to cut. The drawing ended at the shoulder along the tear. Yang Chen took the paper from him and examined it closely. This is a very old, very archaic air nomad acupuncture map. The energy pathways follow our ancestral theories about qi movement. There's a lot of overlap with common medical knowledge, but some important differences as well. She flopped it back down like an old man reading a newsletter over his morning tea.
Chai Si shouldn't have this.
You told us she collects rare books, Kavik said.
She shouldn't have this, Yang Chen repeated. I've never seen one of these diagrams outside a temple before.
There's more ground to search, Jujinta said, his gaze shifting to the door. They circumnavigated the clearing in single file instead of treading on the soft earth, where they might leave tracks. As Kavik brought up the rear, he saw that he hadn't imagined it earlier. Jujinta was antsy. Nervous, even. His movements were unusually stiff and slow. Kavik managed to tap him on the shoulder without getting sliced open, a troubling sign in itself.
What's wrong? You look like you swallowed a horse bug.
Jujinta grimaced. This is a cursed place, he said under his breath, not wanting Yang Chen to hear.
We shouldn't have come.
The Avatar said there aren't any spirits around.
Spirits? No.
Jujinta's nostrils flared as he looked up at the trees.
It's the echoes of people I'm worried about.
He spoke with such quiet certainty that the hairs on Kavik's neck stood on end. The empty beds. Suddenly, the wind through the branches took on the rustle of voices. The birds had been silent for too long.
Psst.
Kavik nearly jumped out of his skin, screaming fleas.
I said stay close, Yang Chen hissed again.
She beckoned them over to a footpath leading deeper into the woods. It hadn't been used in a while. New shoots of grass sprouted in the worn dirt. They followed the trail like the winding banks of a river. The jungle here was so thick, they had to squeeze sideways through the trees at times. The path became a lifeline. If they lost sight of the thread, they might never make it back to the entrance of the maze. The avatar, still in the lead, disappeared around the bend of a thicket. Then Jujinta vanished. Suddenly, Kavik was alone. In his haste to catch up, he slipped as he took the corner, and for a brief moment, the hands that caught him felt like they would drag him into the sky. Thankfully, the palm over his mouth belonged to Yang Chen. She kept it there so he wouldn't make any noise of surprise at the large temple of black stone sitting right in front of them. The greenery had cloaked the edifice as well as any ambush predator. Jointless, giant blocks of hardened lava rose higher than a Taku apartment. No vines or wayward branches touched the construction, as if the jungle recognized the aberration in its midst. Jujinta was right. Customs had been created for places like these. Avoid the shoals, stay clear of the pits, do not go near the black building. We need to look inside, Yang Chen said. Kavik knew it, despite the screams of protest from deep in his marrow. They searched for a door. The pitted stone made it difficult to see edges in the masonry. They almost missed the entrance on the first pass. A tunnel low enough to force a crouch. Why would you go to so much trouble to build this structure and not bother with a full-sized door? Kavik wondered out loud. Because you don't want anything to escape, Jujinta said. Light, sound, people. Perhaps the Avatar should wait outside for her safety. Perhaps the Avatar should upend this entire building with earthbending and shake the contents out like a basket, Kavik said. For all of our safety. A weak joke, to keep the unease at bay. But Yang Chen answered honestly. I don't know if that's called for yet. She opened her hand, and a flame rose from her skin. Carrying it like a torch, she ducked inside the stone. The walls of the tunnel were unsettlingly damp, as if the stone breathed and perspired. They shuffled along quickly. There was no advantage to lingering in such a vulnerable position. Jujinta's limbs blocked the Avatar's precious light. As the rear guard, Kavik had to frequently look over his shoulder at the entrance shrinking behind them. He imagined that someone who'd fallen down a well might enjoy a similar view. Suddenly, the tunnel opened into a larger room, and they could stand again. Yang Chen sent the flame in her hand to a spot on the wall. A mounted torch, used up halfway, but with enough wood left to burn. The fire revealed they had the room to themselves, except for a large pile of scrap metal sitting in the center. Light reflected off jutting angles. Kavik walked over and leaned closer without touching. Iron hoops, in assorted sizes. Some of the rings were only as big around as a pumpkin, and others were so large they'd been broken down into quarters to fit through the tunnel. While they'd been tossed into the heap without care, like a collection of cheap bangles, Kavik noticed the pieces could have been arranged in a continuous line from smallest to largest, without duplicates. What do you make of this? He asked the others. Maybe a cooper had been searching for an ideal barrel size through trial and error. I don't know, Yang Chen said. But there's something underneath. She was right. Buried under the metal was a cloth-covered object, probably a chair, judging by the shape. Yang Chen began to pull the rings off and throw them into the corner, pausing only to examine her hands with distaste.
They're greasy.
Kavik helped her. The iron was indeed slippery with animal fat, as if the pieces had to slide against a moving component. Once the last ring had been pushed aside, he wiped his hands on a corner of the cloth before yanking it away. He needed a moment to fully comprehend the object he'd just unveiled.
Oh, no, Kavik murmured. No, no, no.
It was indeed a chair. But the feet were bolted to the floor. The legs, armrests, and back had leather restraints to fit around the body of the occupant. The seat had been stained dark by foulness. The ends of the arms were grooved and splintered, where fingernails had gouged into the wood. Kavik retched.
Leave!
Yang Chen barked protectively, as if she might quarantine her companions before the taint of evil reached them. He barreled out of the tunnel, holding his sides until he tripped over grass. After emptying his stomach of the travel rations, Kavik rolled onto his back and tried to scrub his face with sunlight. He was tempted to open his eyes and let them fry to get the image of that chair out of his head. Jujinta emerged from the tunnel. A single cough was all he needed to muster himself. He thumped his fist on the stone, upset, but in the manner of an experienced general surveying his losses.
We shouldn't have come, he muttered.
Yang Chen stepped out. Without a word, she motioned them away from the building's edge. Then she turned around and slammed her foot into the earth. Roots snapped, gravel sizzled. The black stone, the whole massive structure, sank straight down, lowered by the Avatar's power as smoothly as a bucket on a winch.
Wait, Kavik wanted to shout, the evidence!
If they buried the traces of Chai Si's crimes, there'd be no way to make her answer for them. And then his rational voice took over. Evidence of what? Presented to whom? Was there a fair and impartial judge waiting in the wings? Could they go to Feishan and ask for the Earth King's law to be applied here? Kavik watched the sinkhole fill, too sick to be impressed. Loose, leached soil covered the stone, a giant grave. Once the act was done, Yang Chen exhaled and wiped her face, showing the exertion of a feat that would have normally required the teamwork of several masters. She took the time to press her hands together and chant, reciting a prayer of warding and protection repeatedly, pleading with the spirits to leave this foul place at a distance. Kavik agreed. Certain evils needed to be buried and never disturbed again. Primary sources. Compared to the horror behind them, the sea was a clean break, a place to bathe Kavik's mind, if not his body. My element, he thought. Thank the tides. The water came in gentle waves. Patches of dark coral stretched below the surface. Breadnut palms clustered along the edges of the sand. Their fruits could have been turned into a bland, gluey porridge, but only unripe, inedible specimens hung from the fronds.
I don't get it, Jujinta said. This is just a cove.
Kavik knew what he meant. Chai Si's trails had led them here, which meant this place must have factored into her plans. But the beach was idyllic. Fish swam, crabs scuttled over the rocks. He doubted very much that outdoor relaxation was part of the unanimity formula. Yang Chen pondered the foaming white water.
Maybe our hosts can tell us the significance of this location, she shouted, loud enough to startle both of her companions. If they can forgive us for trespassing.
Kavik thought she was backtracking,
that the island really was home to spirits, until the very human noise of footsteps came from behind a tall flowering bush. He whirled around and drew a blade of water from the skin at his side. A boy, around 12 or 13 years old, stepped into view, followed by a girl of the same age. Their clothes were tattered and salt-eaten, their cheeks sunken with hunger. They looked like the victims of a shipwreck.
"Did you know they were there the whole time?"
Jujinta whispered.
"No," Yang Chen replied. "Not until after we reached the shore."
Kavik reformed the water into a less threatening sphere, holding it to the side with one hand while reaching out with the other.
"Hey," he said, risking a step forward. "We're not going to hurt you."
"Don't,"
Jujinta warned. The girl and boy didn't seem to like Kavik getting closer, but their eyes were drawn to the fresh water. They licked their scabbed lips.
"Are you thirsty?" he said. "Here, we can share.
Easy now." As he neared, he must have moved too quickly or made an unfriendly face. The girl lunged forward as fast as a viper and punched him with a single knuckle right in his palm. A pinpoint shock ran through Kavik's body, up his arm, crossing his chest, and all the way to his other hand. Numbness followed, like rain surging through a gutter. The only reason he didn't scream was because his lungs were caught in the path. The water he was bending fell to the sand, his control over it gone. His shoulder drooped low enough for the skin strap to slide off. The girl grabbed the pouch and fled along the beach, the boy chasing after. Kavik found the breath to howl as he twisted about, trying to regain the sensation in his arms. Yang Chen grabbed him and forced him to sit.
"Are you okay?"
She ran her hands over his body and came away confused.
"You don't feel injured."
To her, maybe.
"What the flying frog was that?"
The impact had dug between muscle and bone, straight into the gaps of his body. He didn't know he had gaps in his body.
"I've never seen such a fighting technique,"
Jujinta said, with way too much admiration for someone who had just downed his mission partner.
"But I told you not to get near."
"How bad is it?"
Yang Chen asked Kavik.
He knew what she was asking.
She could try to give him more extensive first aid, but at the cost of pursuing the girl and boy. He got to his feet. The numbness had begun to clear, but slowly. He tried extracting water from the damp sand, but only a pathetic tendril rose to meet his efforts. The punch had weakened his bending somehow. If the effects were permanent, he didn't want to think about the possibility.
"I'll walk it off," he growled.
While the two children might have been trained in arcane methods of combat, they were fortunately novices when it came to evasion. They'd fled over the beach and left tracks. The feeling in Kavik's arms gradually returned as the Avatar's team gave chase, and so had some of his bending.
"A good sign," Yang Chen said, though from her lilt, she clearly had no benchmark to compare to.
She, Kavik, and Jujinta followed the footprints around a small scarp. On the other side was a grotto. The sand was littered with rotting bread nut cores and a large bed of ashes that once held a campfire. He suspected fresh water might have sometimes trickled down the dark grooves in the rocks above, but today there was none. The boy and girl were survivors on their last legs. Despite that, they were already halfway up the scarp.
"Please get down from there," Yang Chen said, "before you hurt yourself."
The pair probably realized how vulnerable they were, caught out on the cliff surface like ice geckos. They slowly clambered back to the sand. Kavik's water skin hung over the girl's bony shoulder, already empty.
"We have more," Yang Chen said. "Food, too. You must be hungry, no?"
They didn't respond.
"We want to help," Kavik said. "Tell us what happened here."
Still nothing. Silence was the smartest play, Kavik had to admit. These kids didn't know who he, Yang Chen, and Jujinta were, friend or foe. They might all be standing on the beach for a while.
Yang Chen reached behind her head to undo her scarf, willing to reveal herself to gain their trust.
I'm the Avatar. I'm here to help.
Jujinta put his hand on her elbow.
Wait, he said. Allow me to speak to them in a language they understand.
He advanced on the children. Kavik suddenly remembered the first time they'd met. When Jujinta had casually inserted a blade into another errand runner during what was supposed to be a friendly bout of target practice.
Juji, no!
Too late. The daggers were already in his hands. The first knife buried itself into a peach-sized chunk of driftwood 20 paces away. The target bounced into the air from the impact, and the second knife struck home before it landed. The third was just for show, a big, rude gesture to the governing laws of the cosmos. The block of wood landed neatly on the new tripod that kept it elevated off the sand. Jujinta had juggled an object from afar, using only the points of his blades.
See that?
He said to the stunned children while their mouths still hung open.
Most people don't know what it takes to pull off a feat like that.
The girl and boy eyed Jujinta nervously. His trick, meant to disarm, could have been interpreted as a threat not to run.
But every remarkable talent represents dozens of people who couldn't make the cut, Jujinta said. You sharpen a sword, but discard the grindstones. I know, because I grew up on an island just like this one. I know what goes on in these sorts of places. I could tell right away that we three are cut from the same cloth.
In the span of his speech, he'd managed to get close to them without suffering a paralyzing jab.
Now,
Jujinta clapped them both on the shoulder.
I could behave like the people who ran this camp and promise we'll only take one of you to safety, whoever proves more useful to us, and leave the other to rot. I'm sure you're used to such competitions.
Yang Chen started forward in protest.
I won't, though, Jujinta said. We're going to rescue you both. And once we do, neither of you will have to answer for the horrible deeds I know you've committed to survive.
The boy and girl began to shake.
We'll pretend none of this ever happened, Jujinta said into their ears, as gently as if he were crooning them to sleep. You just need to answer my friend's questions, and then all will be forgiven.
The kids broke down, sobbing.
Merciful spirits, Juji,
Kavik muttered under his breath. That had to be one of the cruelest displays of manipulation he'd ever seen. Jujinta turned around to face Kavik and Yang Chen.
Ask away, he said. You two are better at talking.
The girl's name was Xian, and the boy was Rai Te. They hailed from different villages along the Natsuo Island chain, where national boundaries were blurry and work was hard to come by. They'd answered the call of a visiting unmarked ship recruiting men and women across the archipelago. Age and fitness didn't matter, only the willingness to make sacrifices for their families. The voyage would be made entirely down below decks. Benders like Rai Te stood to earn extra.
We must sound like rubes, he said, sullen.
On the contrary, Yang Chen said gently. We understand completely. You didn't have much of a choice. Once they arrived at this unknown island, they'd been separated into groups. Those who couldn't bend, like Xian, were forced to train their bodies until they broke.
We practiced our striking on each other, she said.
After you punched me back there, I couldn't bend, Kavik said. They taught you how to do that through sheer trial and error?
You held your hand out and stood still, Xian said. I don't think I could have hit you if you were moving.
A pattern emerged in her story of the recruits being separated into multiple little divisions, like a plot of farmland dedicated to different crops. The few earthbenders present had been marched deeper into the volcanic interior of the island for some unknown purpose. They never returned. A randomly selected group was assigned to practice herbalism on the leeward side of the island, where strange flowers and bushes grew. They never returned. The non-benders of Xian's group, who couldn't keep up physically, were taken away one by one. Admitting you were injured was a mistake they quickly learned to avoid, but one you could induce in others.
"We hit each other harder and harder," she whispered, wiping her eyes. "Anything to avoid ranking last. They told us the washouts got sent home with less pay. We didn't question it. We couldn't."
"We understand."
This time, Jujinta, speaking with enough conviction for the three of them. Yangchen and Kavik hid their winces.
"It was all for nothing," Rai Tae muttered. "Several months ago, the camp runners up and left. New recruits stopped arriving. So did the supply boats."
That roughly coincided with Hun She's debacle in Bin Er. Chai Si might have decided to cut ties in case the island was discovered and a trail led back to her.
"There were only 24 of us remaining by then," Rai Tae said. "Once it was clear we were on our own, the adults scavenged a couple of rotting longboats and tried to flee. We wanted to go with them, but they wouldn't let us," Xian said. "Not enough space."
Sweet spirits, Kavik thought. "They would have come back for you, right?" Rai Tae was too young to give him such a condescending look.
"It didn't seem to be their biggest concern," he said sarcastically. "Serves them right, though. A storm struck that very night. We're probably the only 2 survivors."
The brutality of this place had infected the residents. A special strain of fever Chai Si had exhumed from the soil. "What group were you in?" Yang Chen asked Rai Tae. "How did they train you?"
"I was part of the firebending group."
He looked around at his audience with golden eyes and got up from the sand.
"As for our training, maybe it's better if I show you."
He led them back around the promontory to the section of the beach they'd first arrived at, the tiny slice of paradise with its clean sands and blue waters. Rai Tae beckoned Yang Chen closer, having long since made her as the leader, and whispered. Whatever he said made her turn pale. She broke into a run toward the water, and before Kavik or Jujinta could advise caution, was already splashing up to her waist. With a powerful leap, she dove in the rest of the way and disappeared under the surface. Her body became a distant blur, as swift as a silver skim, and then he lost sight of her. Before he had the chance to fear for her safety, a flash of light rippled through the water, as brief and bright as the fireflies Yang Chen had once shown him in the Northern Air Temple. The wind picked up at his back, and he recognized the movement of the air as suction. The rush to fill a void. Space began to open in the sea. Kavik had seen the Avatar cut open waves before, but she'd done it from the shore with bursts of angry airbending, the way a normal person skipped stones across a pond. This time, she'd let herself be swallowed by the beast before exploding it from within. A tidal roar rose in his ears. The gap in the ocean widened enough for him to spot Yang Chen pushing apart walls of water, the workpiece initially resisting but then conquering the jaws of the vice. The sea floor unveiled. Coral reef became walkable hedgerow.
"Are all waterbenders that powerful?" Xian murmured.
Even more remarkable than creating the field of dry land was the minimal motion Yang Chen needed to maintain it. Stay. the hand behind her said to the entire ocean, though the surface was twice her height. With the other, she knelt and picked a dark object off the sandy floor. Kavik thought it was a strand of long kelp, until the lynx fell into place, dangling from her grip. A chain. Yang Chen pulled until it held, one end anchored into the rock, the other end terminated in a loop. A cuff. Kavik searched over the exposed sand and saw the regularity he'd missed before. The work of human beings. A grid of iron points, like the one Yang Chen knelt over, bolted into the shore, evenly spaced. 10 by 10. They had us firebend underwater, Raite explained. Not to produce flame. That would have been impossible. The point was to fight against the surrounding pressure and exert as much force and will as you could in a single burst. Like an explosion. The chains, Kavik said. Daite stared blankly over the horizon. The initial breakthrough only comes if you really, truly believe you're going to die. Yang Chen walked back to the group. The sea closed behind her neatly, as if the elements were afraid of making a mess in her presence. Her face was murderous. She strode right up to Raite. His knees buckled.
I don't know anymore, he said,
afraid of the titan that had come from the sea.
This was just the first step. There's more to it, but I never got that far.
Then who did? Yang Chen demanded. How many? Raite wiped his mouth like a pickpocket under interrogation by the law.
Only 3 of the surviving recruits were chosen to keep going. I guess you had to have big lungs or something. They were all huge.
Kavik described Tapa, Xiao Yun, and Ying Su to him.
Yes,
Daite said, nodding.
That's them. The camp handlers took them away on a ship, a proper ship, long before the rest of us were abandoned. I still remember the guy with the long ears grinning at us and waving farewell. Smug rat pig.
No one else? Kavik asked. A glint of resentment in Adite's eyes, born of rejection.
No one else.
Information made for strange coin. Daite had flipped them the key to their bindings, changed their understanding of the world. Knowing where unanimity ended meant they could finally break free of their standoff with Chai Si. Only Tapa remained, the last tile they needed to complete their hand. They could win. Let's get off this spirit's forsaken rock, Yang Chen said. As she led Xian and Raite away, she tossed Kavik a small dark object that he'd missed her picking up from the seabed. He turned it over, thinking it a normal rock, until he saw the lips of the black shell clamped shut. A night abalone.